Have you been searching for the best ticket deals around? Well, look no further. With TixFlix, the price you see is the price you pay. And TixFlix just happens to have over $6 billion in ticket inventory just waiting for you. They absolutely mean it when they say every ticket, every venue, everywhere. And you can save even more with promo code PULSE in all caps to save you 5% off your total purchase. Just go to TixFlix.com and click the search bar. Search events based on your geographic location. Pick the show you want, and bam, it's showtime. Sporting events, Broadway shows, concerts, and more with TixFlix.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for the email newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest news and savings with TixFlix. That's TixFlix.com, TixFlix.com. Every ticket, every venue, everywhere.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Quarter pounder with cheese and France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice at my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John. And JD.
Oh, very somber, JD. Are you okay?
Oh, I'm fine.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm not a twat.
No, apparently. But, you know, you can't have everything. So since you're not a twat, how was your week, JD?
Oh, I was pretty good. I'm all right. Everything's fun on this end.
Everything's fun?
Busy.
Busy?
I was busy.
Anything exciting? Anything you want to share?
We have this is week one of Nerd Madness.
Oh, yeah.
So, yay. Is that what you're fishing for? Otherwise, I'm like striking out here.
No. I mean, so I guess you were getting everything ready for that. You're part of it. Okay.
Yeah, I was doing my research, you know, making sure I had my Sweet 16 and my regional drawn up.
This will be interesting, because I don't think JD. I don't think John's ready at all.
Ready for what?
See, here we go. This is going to be good.
I knew it.
So, John, what have you been doing all week, then?
Apparently ignoring you, but that's kind of normal. Not really, you know. Caught up on all my anime, caught up on all the CW shows, only to find out that Arrow's getting canceled. It's not
canceled, it's ending. It's not.
Right. Everyone knew it was ending.
Canceled ending. I mean, yeah, it's gracefully degrading.
But what was interesting is that they're only getting 10 episodes next season. That was the big announcement.
Yeah, but that might have been, now that I've read, that might have been, you know, they would have ended this year, but they wanted to fit it in with what was going on with the Crisis on Infinite Earth storyline. So,
huh.
I don't know. Apparently it was Stephen Amell who wanted, you know, he's a husband and a father now. And I think JD can attest that, you know, that takes a chunk out of your time.
What time?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, beyond that, I've been tracking those two Kickstarters that I kept flubbing the, introductions for. Let's see. The Hope Kickstarter by Dirk Manning and Kaylin Smith. Their goal was, for some reason, 7777. I guess that's because 6666 would have, like, opened up the portal of hell on Kickstarter.
It's just their lucky numbers. That's all.
Yeah. Well, their goal was $7,700 bucks in change, and it's up to 16,000 now. And they've just, and I'm very happy because I donated and now we've got like the $15,000 stretch goal just hit. He's got stretch goals up to $75,000. I don't know if he'll make it all, but he's trucking along. And then, cool. Kit Steele's T-Dragon stuff, her goal was $2,000. She was admittedly a newbie for the Kickstarter. And, she's currently, and remember, it was, $2,000 was her goal. She's up to 9,800 now.
Cool.
And I've actually talked to her and she's frantically trying to come up with new stretch goals because it stripped right past all the stretch goals she had.
That's the problem with the stretch goals is like people think it's just extra money that comes in, but it's not. You're creating extra product.
Yes.
So I know a lot of kid creators that won't do stretch goals because it's like, it's deceptive. It's like, oh, look how much extra money it brought in. Yeah, but you gotta give out so much more extra stuff.
Well, yeah.
The price.
Yes and no. I mean, look at the stretch goals for Hope, and it's like the $12,500 stretch goal is an exclusive book plate illustrated by Kaylin Smith with every hair. Okay, so that's a little bit of work for Kaylin Smith. She has to now do a painting and make a book.
That's time.
Right, but the next stretch goal, 15,000, is that they both sign it.
Yeah, that was not quite so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and I think Dirk did that on purpose, though. I think he spread them out, you know, looking over these. It's like one requires the extra work that you're talking about. And the next one is like, and we sign it or something like that, you know?
Well, I think signing 1,000 books in a timely fashion might give you a cramp, just saying.
Or two. Oh, they're going to sign 1,000 book. That's what it is. Yeah, that's fine, man.
Well, however many they sell, right? I mean,
yeah, the book plate in every one of those books. True.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's time. Like I was talking to my buddy Russell Nolte. He's ran. Man, I can't tell you how many successful Kickstarters he's ran. And at the end of the day, when it comes to like the number crunch and stuff, he's just not making enough money. Like he does all right, but it's like with the volume. Like we're talking like you know like tens of thousands of dollars. I think he might hit $100,000 on one. Like. It just what winds up being in the pocket is just not enough because comics is such an expensive medium.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, and when your stretch goals like both Kickstarters had stretch goals of foil covers when they reached a certain amount, and they both blew past those. Okay. So we're getting foil covers of Hope and this T-Dragon book. So it's pretty cool.
I got it. We can do a Kickstarter. And our goals could all be dinner with John, just so we can finally get him a girlfriend.
Are you trying to have people? They're going to be asking you to pay them money, not to pledge.
It's more appropriate for a GoFundMe than a Kickstarter.
This is true. This is very true.
I was just thinking of a petition, maybe. Yeah. Just fun. It's really fun watching those, and especially like somebody like Kit, who you know, the newbie, and seeing her or hearing her reaction is like, you know, she's aghast. Dirk is like, I could do better.
Yeah,
fair to middling.
So I I've made a decision. I'm going to stop listening to certain podcasts.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
Yeah, I know. And I listened to them again. And again, they had a news article on there. It was like, wait a minute. That sounds weird. And I heard this, but I thought it was a rumor. And I looked it up and it's like, yeah, there's no confirmation on this, really.
The first step toward beating addiction is admitting you have a problem.
I know. I mean, okay, maybe you heard something different. But I looked on Variety and Wired. So they want Idris Elba to replace Will Smith as Deadshot, but it's not confirmed. That's just Warner Brothers' top pick. Right? Has anyone heard anything different about that?
Nope.
No. They're pretty tight-lipped about that, I guess.
Well, I mean, they said, oh, yeah, it's a done deal. It's been confirmed. And I'm like, I looked. I scoured the internet looking for it to be confirmed, and it was like, no, all the articles said that it was Warner Brothers' top pick, but there was nothing about Idris Elba saying, yeah, I'm going to do the movie. So, oh, well.
I saw the trailer for the new Idris Elba rock Jason Statham movie. Looks corny and silly, and I can't wait to see it.
Calvin and Hobbes. I mean, Hobbes and...
Hobbes and Shaw.
Shaw, yes.
The Fast and the Furious presents Hobbes and Shaw. It's going to be ridiculously stupid.
Speaking of somebody who has never watched any of the Fast and the Furious movies, this one looks interesting to me.
I agree. I don't like many of them, but I like The Rock. So, you know, should be fun.
Yeah. The other preview I saw, we haven't really talked about it, is Brightburn.
Oh, that was cool. I don't even know if I'll watch that. It looks brutal.
Did it creep you out too much, John?
It did. It creeped me out. Are you kidding me? Anybody who's anybody in comics has always thought, what if Superman really were just freaking evil? And the answer is nobody survives. And not even in a, you know, nobody goes quietly and nobody survives.
We've seen it in comics a bunch. Like, the evil Superman in comics is a trope. But in film, it's never been done. And this being a completely new property, one by James Gunn, I don't know what to expect.
I would argue Superman 3, we got an evil Superman.
That was more like an evil, that was like an evil director, evil writer.
The less said about Superman 3, the better.
Yeah.
Hey, his uniform was darker and his hair was slicked back. Come on.
It did inspire the plot for Office Space.
There you go. I definitely need to stop. I need to find a podcast to replace it, though, in my repertoire. So if you, the listener, have a podcast you listen to that I might not be listening to, let me know, because I want to find some new podcasts. So let's talk a little social media madness here. Keeping it short this week, I only have really one or two here, main topic, because this got a lot of feedback and kind of shocked. So we talked about, you know, WB has officially said, like, the DCEU is dead. They're not going to worry about making connected movies anymore. They're going to be standalone. Ugh. And we got some feedback on this. I was kind of shocked that the first one was a friend of the show, Rusty Gilligan. They need to stay away from big stars and concentrate on CW network projects, cleaner and better actors, better shows. So, I mean,
that's not going to happen.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
We'll just stop making movies. Yeah. Who likes money? I don't.
I think what he's saying. I think what he's saying is he enjoys the shows more than the movies. So he'd like to see them concentrate more on the shows. Right. So, and then we had. Repeat offender Rob Foster say superhero films have peaked. Captain Marvel looks to tank. Avengers 4 will be a last hurrah. Then Marvel, Disney will go the way of DC Warner. All stars are at the close of their contracts. Everything is Green Lantern from then on, my honest opinion. To which JD said, "Hello, sunshine."
It's a great gift. It took me like 10 minutes to find just the right smart-ass gift. I put time into it. It's just so, I don't know, man. I mean, clearly that's true. Like, Captain Marvel did terrible this weekend.
Oh, horrible, horrible. We'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Just terrible, I'm sure.
Which I replied with a gif. I don't know why I like this one, but it's a little frog sitting on a step, and it says, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." Justin Miles said, "About time. It's okay to not copy Marvel. Shazam looks great, by the way."
He's right.
The United States Vampire Service said,
"God, I love these.
They're going to focus on writing terrible smaller standalone films instead of writing terrible DCEU mess of films. Why not just focus on finding better writers?"
I just find this funny that people think that the problems all come back to a writer. Like, writers are hired and they're told this is what a movie is going to be, unless they're doing something on spec, which means they're doing it on their own, like, they're telling you. Like, a director comes with, this is the movie I want. Write the movie I want.
And then, so, the handle is K-Y-L-A-S-R-X-X, and her name is just two hearts, replied, how can it be dead if they continue to make movies that exist in the same cinematic universe?
She's not wrong.
And it's true.
This is a legitimately good question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue that point, but I mean, yeah. I mean, the point is they're not going to have connective tissue anymore. But yes, if Momoa continues to be Aquaman and Gal Gadot continues to be Wonder Woman, you know, they didn't change universes all of a sudden, right?
Who knows?
Oh, this is another one. This is the good one. So the DCEU is crap. This was Rusty. The wrong actors for the most. Feminism SJW runs rampant and no continuity. No real DC lives on the CW shows. The real DC lives on in the CW shows, but they are ruining that with Supergirl crap. They tried to follow Marvel and failed. And then you replied, yeah, screw that feminazi Wonder Woman. I just pulled the old, yeah, that was JD. I just pulled out the old classic Michael Jackson eating popcorn gif and said, okay, two wrestlers going at it. And then you guys stopped. It was disappointing.
Wow.
Matt had chimed in with, it's a little disappointing, but so has the DCU been overall. Aquaman and Wonder Woman were definitely the standouts, and I actually like Man of Steel. I totally like to see another crack at Justice League, but with maybe James Wan at the helm.
James Wan, good director, but yeah. Matt, I love you, but Man of Steel. Come on.
AJ O. Manson, comic writer. I think it's absolutely the better choice. That way they can finally do some really great innovative films without worrying about continuity.
I've said that like 19 times on these shows, and he just summed it up in two sentences.
Yes.
It's a good job.
And Cameron Khan, I love it. It's an amazing idea. So yeah, I mean, a lot of people have opinions on the DCEU, and it's...
I think it's safe to say it's one of the most interactive posts we've had on Twitter. Like, every time that goes up, there's tons of responses. There were more today that got posted, too. Like, it won't die, unlike the DCEU.
And then, of course, we also talked about, this is the other real quick recap, we talked about Zachary Levi and him making a video addressing the fans about the Shazam Captain Marvel quote-unquote controversy. And of course, since we're talking about Captain Marvel, that's why I brought this in. The Devil's Enemy, no comparison, Shazam all the way. Gateway Comics, actual reviews from people who have actually seen the film, Boy Monster, are starting to come in. And so far, what I've seen has been positive. Okay. Ghost of the Stratosphere, the whole Marvel DC thing is beyond stupid. And the neckbeard rage about Captain Marvel is even worse. I am really excited for both of these flicks. I am more into Shazam because I am excited for DC film to finally be good, but I bet both are great. Screw the division. Pino Comics, I'm not excited for Cap, but only because it looks lackluster. And it's a character I never cared about. Those are the reasons to not care about a project, not because it has a girl in it. The Gorilla Brain Podcast, our new buddies in podcasting. We just aren't Captain Marvel fans, sadly. We just want the Skrulls.
I like to read though their tweets like they're a Hive collective.
Yes.
Or their royalty, one or the other.
And finally, OJC, I think Zach was misinformed about what was happening and why. I think he is a classic guy. Generally speaking, with the way he treats his fans, I was less impressed with David Sandberg, who came across as a deuce with his tweets. I don't know what that means, but...
Oh, good. I thought I was alone on that. I had no idea.
I don't know
about
what David Sandberg did, and I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but thank you for the reply, OJC.
Yeah, you know me.
And speaking of Gorilla Brain Pod, our brothers in arms, along with us and So Wizard and some other great pods, don't forget, boys and girls, we are part of the Pulse Podcast Network, and we are proud members, and you should go check them out at PulsePodcastNetwork.com. And you know what? Let's take a moment to hear a word from them.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is 8-Bit Ray from the Gorilla Brain Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Did you know that you could be using this spot to advertise your company or business? Well, I've done the research, and PodcastInsights.com report that podcast listeners are loyal, affluent, and mostly college-educated. But most importantly, are 5 times more likely to interact with the ad they hear on their favorite podcast than an ad from any other medium. If you would like to advertise your company or brand with our network, it's simple. All you have to do is send an email to marketing@PulsePodcastNetwork.com. I'll say it one more time. marketing@PulsePodcastNetwork.com, and we hope to hear from you soon.
All right, guys. So, let's get to our first big topic of the evening. We want to talk about Nerd Madness. This is our stab at getting in on the old March Madness madness. Of course, we talked about this last week. We took 4 areas of fandom, anime, comics, TV, and movies. And, we all took an area. We picked 16 from that area. We're going to present them now. And then we will have polls that are going to go up where you guys are going to vote. And the winners will then be paired, of course. JD's going to put together a bracket for us, and we'll put that on our website for you guys to follow. But since this was your idea, JD, why don't we make John go first?
Because there's no way. I'm not.
John's still making his sweet 16, his 16. I'll go first.
I completely flubbed this. I did.
So you had comics, JD. What did you come up with?
So we'll start at number 16. I went in, I tried to focus. My focus was, books that primarily were out in 2018. Like, I did storylines for the most part, and some of them might have started in 17 or finished up in 19, but if they were in that general area, that's where my focus was. Number 16, I made this my last pick because this is a Kickstarter exclusive book from a good friend of mine named Sean Manning. It's Macbeth the Red King. You're not going to find it in a lot of the best of comics lists of the year. This was something that was that I really quite enjoyed. From a good friend and a remarkably underrated writer, it was a more of a historic look on Macbeth. Number 15 would be a book called Dark Ark by Cullen Bunn. It's basically, you had Noah's Ark during the flood, and on the other ark, you have all the mythological and demon animals, we should say, like your unicorns, your vampires. It's a great little horror book. Like, it's really, really cool. It's from Aftershock Comics. If you're not reading it, get into it. My number 14 seed was The Dreaming, which was a sequel to The Sandman, written by a really good British writer named Cy Spurrier. Creepy in some spots, really cool in others. Like, I think it was the right guy and the right choice to continue Neil Gaiman's seminal work. I picked number 13, I picked a book called Infidel, which was kind of a horror book in the vein of Islam. The less I say about this book, the better. Just read it. It's really, really cool. Number 12, I went X-Men Red, which was a great return to the X-Men universe this year. I was late. I read this weekend. I read this run. I really liked it because I was putting my list together and I realized, boy, I didn't have enough for 16. So I opened up and I busted out the old Comixology Unlimited app and I was downloading stuff. So check this out. Nice return to form for Jean Grey. Just in time for that movie, they're going to kill her. Number 11, Snagglepuss Exit Stage Left. We talked about this quite a bit on the show. It was well worth the read. It's basically Snagglepuss's Truman Capote. I highly recommend everyone read it. Number 10, a little bit of a curveball, Claus and the Crying Snowman from Grant Morrison, my favorite writer of all time. This continues his look of Santa Claus. If I could boil it down, it's basically Santa Claus as Conan the Barbarian early in his career. Read it. Number 9, the Immortal Hulk. I'm taking up a lot of time, so I'll just rip through these last couple. Number 8, I chose Venom by Donny Cates. We've covered a little bit some of the controversies going on, but Donny Cates is doing some really cool stuff with the Venom character, breathing new life into a character that, quite honestly, I felt was stale. Like when they announced that Flash Thompson was no longer going to be Venom, they were going to go back to Eddie Brock. I was skeptical. I said, I'm not interested in this. I was wrong. Venom has been a great read. Number 7, I kind of did the all-encompassing Black Panther books that came out in the wake of the movie. Ta-Nehisi Coates' specific version of the character. Great book. A lot of political leanings into it. The perfect guy to write that story. Highly recommend this past year's Black Panther run. Number 6, Dark Knight's Metal. Scott Snyder's most insane book yet.
I was wondering when you were going to get to Metal.
Yes. It was my number 6 choice. I'm actually a little behind. I haven't finished it yet. I'm backloaded on it, but I really, really like what I've read so far of it. Scott Snyder had a fantastic run on Batman earlier this decade, and I think this is a nice little swan song for him to the character. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. It's the nuttiest Batman story I've ever read. And like I said, I love Grant Morrison, so highly recommend. Number 5, I went a little bit of an oddball. The Comics History of Pro Wrestling by my buddy Aubrey Sitterson. I love comics. I love pro wrestling. Aubrey does the unenviable task of telling the story of the history of a business that I love in comic form. Chris Moreno is the artist on it. And if you like comics and you love wrestling, or you love wrestling and like comics, you're going to love this book. If you have no background whatsoever in pro wrestling, this is the best way to learn about why this business is awesome. And it is a business. Aubrey did a fantastic job on this. Number 4, I went with Tom King's Batman. It's been going on since 2016. In 2018, we kind of had the culmination of the wedding storyline, or the lack of wedding storyline between Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle. Tom King's a great writer. And this is he does somber really, really well. And I think this is going to be a Batman story that kind of stands the test of time a little bit. Number 3, I went with Chip Zdarsky's Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. This, again, another book that kind of started getting steam in 2017. Really picked it up in this past year. I'm a big Dan Slott fan. I know that's a point of discussion on this show between me and Dave, but I like Dan Slott's run on Spider-Man. But that being said, when I first read Chip Zdarsky's version of Peter Parker, I felt like it was a breath of fresh air. He writes him differently. He's really, really funny. And I really like the stories he did. I think that this book, I'm actually a bigger fan of this book now that Slott's left Amazing Spider-Man. I think that Spectacular Spider-Man is the superior title, not to be accused of the superior Spider-Man. Number 2, Brian Bendis's still burgeoning run on Superman. Brian Bendis does Brian Bendis things. He's coming in and doing the closest thing I can compare this to for older fans would be when John Byrne came in and put his stamp on the character.
Yeah.
I like where it's going so far. Brian Bendis is one of the best character writers in comics. I think he does character moments better than any other writer in the medium today, especially working primarily in superhero books. And I think that sometimes it's very easy to lose the character of Superman. And Bendis has been great at this his whole career, really getting to characters. And yeah, you get the Bendis speak and stuff like that, but I mean, it's his thing. It's what he does. And I like that we get, Clark and Lois back as they're feeling like people again. They're not just characters in a big, overarching, sweeping, epic story. They feel like people to me.
I mean, and that's such a thing in the industry that, that's a term I hear all the time. Bendis speak.
It is. It's that rapid fire dialogue where you got the overlapping word balloons. It has the pace of conversation. It's supposed to simulate the pace of conversation, but it's really like watching an episode of the Gilmore Girls. But that's, it is. That's how he writes, but it's cool. I really like his writing. And I like what he's done with Superman so far, man. It's been great. I really want to see where it's going. And my number one seed in the comics regional is Tom King and Mitch Gerad's Mr. Miracle. This book is really different. It's awesome. Tom King, I think, is the best writer in comics going right now. I'm not crazy on Heroes in Crisis, so I didn't make my list. Maybe when the story's done, I'll have different feelings on it. But Mr. Miracle has really done something unique in comics. Tom King does this, like, you have the Bendis speak we just talked about. Tom King has this style of writing where it's almost dreamlike in some ways in the way he writes his dialogue. A lot of Mr. Miracle, the first couple issues are kind of hard to follow, but there's a genius to it. And it really is a book that's, it's, he takes superheroes and it's really a book about depression and relationships. And it's wrapped in this crazy dark side story. If you enjoyed Tom King's run on The Vision that he did a couple years ago, and you've read Sheriff of Babylon and you like Batman, in my humble opinion, Mr. Miracle was the best thing in comics last year. So that is my number one seed. And for those who don't know who Don't Kid Sports, we're going to put this up in tournament format. The one will face the 16, the two will face the 15, so on and so forth. And you all can tell me why I'm stupid.
Oh, well, yeah, I can tell you that without putting it up.
You do it every week.
Just number one, I love your list because you included indies along with DC and Marvel stuff. So great job with that.
I probably would have included more, but I mean, like, I didn't want to get them just trounced because I knew a lot of people won't be familiar with it. So I tried to be as much, I tried to lean as much into what's mainstream as I could without just giving it, you know, stuff I didn't like.
Right. And, speaking of plugging things for friends, the metal. So those who are familiar with the metal storyline, Harley Quinn is not in Batman Metal. However, when they requested a friend of mine, Greg Horn, to do one of the covers, he did a Harley Quinn, right? Which people loved, but she wasn't in the story. And it was so loved that DC took his design from that cover and made a Harley Quinn statue, which I'm mentioning it because it is now currently available from DC Collectibles. So yeah, you can get a statue for Harley Quinn Metal who's not in the comic. So it makes for a fun little, conversation piece. So you guys should check it out. It's a really cool statue. Again, DC Collectibles.
That is really cool.
So John, did you get your 16 while we were talking, or should I go now?
16 what? No.
So, Dave, you're up.
Yes, I have, but go ahead, Dave.
Okay. So I had TV, and I mentioned it to the guys earlier this week. So I started with, okay, 16. Can I get 16? So I said, let me just start with TV shows currently on TV that are based on comic books. And I got a list of like 19.
Oh, that's nuts. I didn't realize there was that many.
Yes. Now, a couple of them.
I thought
them,
there were more.
Go ahead. A couple of them are, you know, like Lucifer is not a superhero show. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but.
So,
it's still DC.
So basically what I did is I know. And there was a couple other ones that weren't on there. What I did is I tried to keep it to shows that I know we watch, we've talked about. And then, I said, okay, I'm going to do their seed order by, popularity, by ratings. So I took their average rating from last season. Problem is that I also included the Netflix shows. There's no way to get their numbers. So I kind of threw them in different spots as wild cards. If that makes sense to you guys.
Works for me.
All right. So I will do it like you did. I will start with the 16th and work up to the first. At 16 is, of course, the one and only Iron Fist, from Netflix. 15 is the show that everyone is currently talking about, and that's Deadly Class. Have you guys watched it yet? It's actually really good.
We talked about it, never did it.
Yeah. I've been watching it, and it's disturbing. I mean, the writing is just that good that it's disturbing, and you still want to see it.
Yeah. 14, no. See, damn it. I forgot I left this on here, but it's too late. The list is done. I'm not going to change it. 14 is American Gods, which is based on, obviously, the comic of the same name. 13 is Preacher. 12 is The Punisher. 11 is Black Lightning. 10 is Arrow. So, as you noticed, 10 is, you know, if I'm doing this in reverse order, it's pretty low. I was shocked when I saw what Arrow and Black Lightning's ratings were. But we'll get into that later. Number 9, Legends of Tomorrow. 8, Supergirl. 7, Flash. 6, Luke Cage. And then 5, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. 4 is Gotham. 3 is Gifted. 2, I had to make Daredevil because he's my all-time favorite TV show. And can you guys guess what the number one show on TV based on a comic book is?
Flat? No. What?
I'll give you a hint. It's been the number one comic book show for a long time.
Oh, no. Not Super Freaking Natural.
No. But it's not based on a comic book.
Oh, I didn't Jinx. Know. I thought it might have been.
You owe me a root beer. No. The Walking Dead.
Oh, seriously?
Still has amazing ratings. So there you go. They're my 16. So we shall see how Iron Fist does against The Walking Dead. So
I like your list.
Yeah, like I said, I kept American Gods. Now I think about it, I did think about that. I kept American Gods and Walking Dead in there, so they weren't all superhero shows, but
no, I think it works. I think it works pretty good. I was wondering why your order was the way it was. I'm like, I didn't know Dave was a big fan of The Walking Dead as this, but it makes sense if you did it based off of rating or some perception of rating. It's exactly. Cool. I like that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, again, I didn't know what Daredevil or Punisher or Iron Fist's ratings were, so I just kind of stuck them wildcardly where I kind of think they fit.
Netflix keeps that stuff close to the vest.
Oh, yeah. All right, John. Did you come up with 16 while we were talking?
Yes. And I am realizing that A, I watch a hell of a lot more anime than I thought. And B, there is no human way possible to have covered all of the genres and all of the anime that has come out in the last, like, even 2 years, let alone the last 5.
Well, too late. You have no choice. Do it.
Fine. Fine. So, all right. So going backwards. Let's see here. I guess I will start with Hinamatsuri, what happens when an android goes back in time and appears in a mobster's home and becomes the mobster's kid. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Golden Wind, just because literally everything in anime these days is a JoJo's reference. And JoJo's has probably been is one of the longest running mangas ever. It's been around since the 70s, I think, 80s at the very least. So, Sword Art Online, Elitization. That's because everybody hates it. You are only one of two people. You either hate Sword Art Online or you love Sword Art Online. So that's in there for basically the people who will vote for it because they love it and vote for it because they hate it. The Ancient Magus's Bride, which is a really interesting one. It's kind of a bad guy manga or anime about, you know, a woman who's sold as a slave to the Magus, who's basically the skull head guy. I'm also realizing trying to explain these, I mean, to people who don't watch anime is like almost impossible. I'll go on. Sword Art Online Alternative, Gun Gale Online, which was actually much better than Sword Art Online because it didn't have Kirito in it. And there weren't any overpowered OP people just walking around, just beating everybody. This next one, I'm not going to explain it. Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. You're just going to have to look that one up. That's not a shonen or a tournament or anything like that. That's actually just a really nice love story. Sort of. As far as anime goes, My Hero Academia season 3, because it is killing it. It's been doing very well. And that's basically just how people become heroes. It's all about, you know, one kid who is being tutored by his hero, who I won't say anything about what happens, and he goes on to become one of the end is supposed to be him becoming the greatest hero in the world.
So I see the commercials for that all the time and go, maybe I'll watch it, but.
Oh, yeah. And there's cosplay all over the cons for it too.
Yes.
So, you know, that is like uber popular, but I'm rating these by how much I like them, and it might be skewed towards my, you know, the things that I like.
That's fine. That's what I did. And we'll let the people tell us we're wrong.
That's perfectly fine. And one of those that people are going to argue about is Goblin Slayer, which basically is, it's an anime that in the first episode, you have basically goblins raping and pillaging people. And it shocked that the first episode shocked people. But the rest of the anime was awesome. And that first episode set the tone, and it needed it. You know, I think it was artistic, sort of. Castlevania by Netflix. Netflix getting into the mix here. And, they tested like, 3 episodes of this whole, season, and it went very, very, very well. And so they came out with the last part of the last episodes of the season, and it killed it. It was actually good. People should watch that. Getting even better than that is Devilman Crybaby. Now, Devilman has been around for a long time as well, but every once in a while it'll pop up. And in this case, it was, I don't know, it's like the difference between a regular cartoon and a cartoon that's going for an Oscar. So something like that. You'd have to see it. That one's pretty graphic. And going from completely graphic to no graphic at all is Dragon Pilot, which is, was directed by, Hiroshi Kobayashi. And it is just, it's one of those animes like, okay, you know, I've watched the bad guy trounce everybody. I've watched people's heads getting ripped off and, you know, and eating entrails. I just need a palate cleanser. And that's what Dragon Pilot is. It's just a nice little anime about dragons that transform into planes, specifically fighter jets. You have to see it to understand.
Alrighty.
And then going back the other way to Overlord 3, what if in an anime you followed the bad guy and he was really bad, not like ironically bad, he's bad, but you want to root for him, but just like, oh my God, can the heroes just finally run fast enough to get away from this guy? Overlord is just, it's an isekai, but it's an isekai, basically other world, where a guy gets dropped into another world, and becomes basically the most evil bastard on the face of the planet. And when I say evil, I mean like just killing people left and right, using them. And but it's very well done. Let's see. Next one on my list is Mob Psycho 100. Now, Mob Psycho is written by a artist named One. That's his name. He also did One Punch Man. And there's a kind of parody between the two, the way he writes. It's an misunderstood character who, is kind of out of regular society, but is so OP. Nobody realizes just how overpowered the guy is. So, and Mob Psycho is just fun to watch. And it takes turns sometimes that you don't expect it to, but it's always kind of tugging at the heartstrings, which is good. And then you get a really good fight with people with psychic powers that levels a whole city, which is nice. The next one I got is, again, this is another one where, you know, of course the title couldn't possibly have anything to do with the actual story itself. That time I got reincarnated by a slime. This is another one which is kind of a palate cleanser. It's...
You've mentioned that one on the show before.
Yes, yes. I love this one. It is just a nice little, another isekai where he's going through, a guy gets stabbed, gets reincarnated in this other world as a slime, but as a slime with godlike powers. And it's just fun to watch, and it's a nice thing. And the guy playing the slime is just, he's trying to bring all the monsters together into a society where they don't fight. And the trials and travails of that. Next one is Seven Deadly Sins Season 2, because the Nanatsu no Taizai are just awesome. And some of the fight scenes in this are just beautiful.
Okay. Do you have these numbered?
Yes.
Okay.
You just haven't been saying the numbers.
Oh. Okay. Well, that Nanatsu no Taizai, that's number 2.
Oh, okay. I'm like, because I'm like thinking, did we go over 16?
I'm going, yeah. That's because the titles are a lot longer than your normal.
That's true. Yes.
Good point.
Yeah, I had Flash and Black Lightning and Punisher. Yeah.
So, and then lastly, I'm counting this as an anime. I don't care what anybody says. Go ahead, argue with me. Thunderbolt Fantasy. Because this is probably hands down, it was the most surprising show that I watched. And when I say surprising, I mean, after the first episode, you're just sitting there staring at the screen going, what the hell just happened? And why is that so damn good? And literally, that is what every single review I've ever seen of it says. It's like, I watched this on a dare and now I can't stop. It's just that good. And it's all puppetry. Okay. I cannot explain it to you any more than just it's puppetry. I'm counting it as a freaking anime, and it is just damn good.
So
I have no idea what you just, none of what you said made sense to me.
I am shocked that you did not include Dragon Ball Z at all on your list.
Oh, that was, you know, I have that on my like alternates list, and that's only because It's just too easy.
Yeah, it's too commercial.
That's, you know,
everyone would have voted for that.
Well, yeah, Dragon Ball Z is like the free square on bingo, you know? especially with Dragon Ball Super out. So,
all right, so that is comics, TV, and anime, and then we have movies left.
Yeah, I believe you took the first 16 and I took the bottom 16.
You mean 8?
That's what I mean.
I thought this would be a discussion because I don't know if John wanted to bring any. So I brought 8 just so that, you know, we could discuss it. These are all movies that came out last year. So I'll start. And then, so this isn't any particular number order. I'll leave that up to you, JD, when you put the lists together.
All right? I'll just referee and tell you which one of you are wrong.
Okay, so, of course, I have Infinity War on here.
Oh, yeah. That's another free square.
Yeah, that's a free square. A movie that, like, we didn't really talk about on the podcast much, but I did watch it, and I really enjoyed it. Incredibles 2.
Good flick.
Yeah. Of course, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Black Panther, that's another free square. Deadpool 2. Ralph Breaks the Internet. Come on, people.
No, seriously? Really?
If you want to boycott it, you've got to replace it with something.
Stand by. Hear my list, and then if you have something you want to contribute, we can debate.
I mean, I was going to say I could do Angry Birds, ironically, but Or no, the Emoji Movie. There you go. go ahead, sorry.
Solo, a Star Wars movie. And last but not least, Bohemian Rhapsody. And I included Bohemian Rhapsody because those who saw the movie, I think, would understand where in the movie, Freddie Mercury, played by Rami Malek, talks about how Queen saw themselves as the outsiders, the rejects of society, playing to the other rejects of society. So, you know, I think that fits with our nerd theme. All right.
Can't argue. Can't argue it. All right, I got my list. Again, the first one, this might be not being number one. I don't know what you're saying. But Spider-Verse.
Okay. I knew you were going to have that. That's why I didn't include it.
Probably my favorite film of 2018. Mission Impossible Fallout, number two.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. It was a good one. I liked it a lot. I'm not a huge Mission Impossible fan, but that one really worked for me.
And it was the mustache that destroyed Justice League.
It was the mustache that really killed the DCEU. It really was. Paramount has had a rough year, but they can say they killed the franchise.
Yes.
I got a little dip for number three. I went, I'm a big horror movie fan, as you guys know. A Quiet Place, the John Krasinski horror film.
Ooh, okay.
I refollowed it up with Hereditary, another small budget horror film that was just awesome. So I highly recommend that one.
I've heard really good things about that one.
It's really good. Number five, I went Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
And then number six, Call Me a Wuss. I really liked Christopher Robin.
Aww.
I love Winnie the Pooh. I got a little boy starting to get me on that stuff.
I haven't seen that one yet, but I do want to see it.
Tearjerker.
Yeah.
Tearjerker. I got back to my roots. Number seven, I went with a Netflix exclusive movie, Black Mirror, Bandersnatch.
Okay.
That's another one I've heard weird things about.
Very, very weird, but awesome. And then number eight, I got a degree in documentary filmmaking, so I picked my favorite documentary of the year. This will be a 16 seed. Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers documentary.
Okay.
About what a phenomenal human being he was.
All right, John, this is your opportunity. Okay.
I was going to say the Mr. Rogers one. I forgot about that. That's like everybody should see that, actually.
Yeah. It's that good.
Yeah. So what do you want me to do?
Do you want to boycott any?
Well, you dispute. This is the play-in game, as we call it in the NCAA tournament. This is the play-in game. Which movie do you have that you would like to challenge for a spot on the movie list?
Let's see. And you had these in the this is in the email too, right?
Yes.
So
mine's not. I put mine together before sending an email. Dave did. Or yeah.
But I don't. You know,
you seem like you wanted to challenge Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yeah, but you know what I challenge it with? How to Train Your Dragon 3.
I knew it.
Oh, seconded.
All right, then I will concede, and we'll replace Ralph with How to Train Your Dragon 3.
I'm done. Goodbye.
I'm out. You can't leave yet.
By the time you hear this podcast, we will have the 64-man bracket released, and we will release my thought is to do one regional every 2 days until the next show.
Okay.
And then we can go on and talk about the results next week.
Yes, and the plan is to release the final results on our 300th episode. So,
believe it or not, that was a coincidence. That worked out quite nicely.
Yes. All right. So now that we got that craziness out of the way, let us get to the main topic of the evening.
An hour into the podcast.
Yeah.
That's fine, man. We'll get a little bit longer this week.
But people are going to want to hear this. Of course, we're going to talk about, the one and only Captain Marvelous.
I'm outraged. I am bored.
It is better. darling, it is better to look good than to feel good. And you look marvelous.
What?
Oh, God, that's old SNL.
You don't know Fernando from Saturday Night Live? Billy Crystal?
You're pulling it there, man. You're pulling it from way back.
Oh, I can't believe you don't know that reference.
I'm a lot younger than you guys.
I think you're playing dumb so you can look cooler.
Looking cool on this show is not an option.
All right, so we're going to start like we always do, real quick. We're going to go by the numbers. The opening box office for the weekend, it made $153 million domestically, $302 million overseas, for a total of $455 million on its opening weekend. So suffice it to say that it was a success, and we will probably get a Captain Marvel 2. As of when I made this email, because the scores keep changing, the Rotten Tomatoes critic score was 80%. The audience score was 58%. And last but not least, we asked our audience, we did a poll today, what did you think of Captain Marvel? Let us know. We'll discuss the results on the next Superhero Speak. I gave them four options. One of the best in the MCU was the first answer. It was okay, I guess, is the second answer. It was terrible. And who? Bring on Shazam.
Oh my gosh.
The least answer, the smallest percentage, 8%, want to, it was terrible. 25% said who? Bring on Shazam. And a tie was between, at 34% between one of the best in the MCU, and it was okay, I guess. And then we had some discussion on this. We won't go into all of it, because we talked about it before we started. Ghost of the Stratosphere said, top 10 MCU flick for me. Not the elite, but pretty darn good. Take a Knee for Marvel and DC said, it was good, not great movie, definitely enjoyable, and a welcome addition to the MCU. I don't know what it means to that Captain Marvel herself was my fourth or fifth favorite part of the movie. Code name Roy. Don't forget, I will also want to watch Shazam. Okay. You can go see that one too. You're allowed to see both, Codename Roy. We won't stop you.
No, you must pick sides.
Golden State Comics. I found it fun and pretty good overall. I have some gripes filmmaking-wise, but nothing major. But also, I cannot wait for Shazam either. Timothy Jones, a great beginning to the future of the MCU. Marvel was a lot of fun. A movie was a lot of fun. If anyone can take on Thanos, it's her. Mid and end credit scenes are vital. Listener Skiznot said it was solid. And I will stop reading the tweets right there because...
There's too many of them?
No, this is where somebody got involved who was basically trolling us, which I don't know why this person was following us in the first place. But I will say to Emerald Centurion, shout out to you for, trying to come to our defense. Basically, we just blocked the person and we're done with them. So we'll leave it at that. All right. So let's do what we always do. Let's go around the room real quick. Initial thoughts without any spoilers. And we can start with JD.
Liked it a lot.
All right. Short and simple?
I mean, no spoilers. I mean, like, I liked it. It was good. I enjoyed it.
All right. John?
It was damn good.
Oh, okay. Another short and simple. All right. I will say, of the 21 films in the MCU, this is one of them. it was okay. all right. I do think people should go out and see it. So I think the overall consensus is that, people should go see this movie. If you haven't at this point, there will be spoilers. So if you don't want the movie ruined for you, which at this point is probably not going to happen. But if you don't want us to ruin it, then just stop listening and wait till you see the movie and come back and listen. if you don't care about spoilers, all right, here we go. So where to begin with this movie? I'm going to start off with, like, there was a lot of trolls, we'll call them, out there who basically were hating this movie without seeing it. And it basically based on comments made by, the lead actress that they didn't agree with. And I think that's a stupid, we've talked about this on the show already. That's a stupid reason to not like a movie and attack it.
This is the movie that finally broke Rotten Tomatoes with the pre-viewing or whatever.
That was the mouse stepping in. Let's be honest.
But that's what it took, you know.
As you like to say all the time on the show, John, about the four quadrants, Disney is the master of the four quadrants, and I knew that. Even if there was a little bit of yay girl power in it, it was not going to be overwhelming in this movie. And it wasn't. Like,
nope.
Let's be honest. If you are sitting there seething right now, oh, Captain Marvel sucks because it's a feminist movement movie, you're an idiot. Go watch the movie. There are yay girl power moments in it, but that is not what the movie's about.
So they're the same moments that every hero has, basically, you know?
I think there's more feminism-type moments in Wonder Woman than in this one.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
I'll also say that I think all of the actors in this movie were really good. I think the visuals are well done, but I didn't like the script. I'm going to be completely honest. I had issues with the script of this movie, with the story. And it was just like, and let me explain that, right? And you guys can rebut to this. Like, I understand, they tweaked her origin story slightly, right? But the problem is it felt rushed and shoehorned in specifically so that they could have Captain Marvel in Endgame. And that was the only thing. Like, I feel like she could have had a much better movie if they took their time with it. And I felt let down by it. What do you guys think of that?
I've never disagreed with anything you said more.
I'm right there with you, JD.
Okay. So, okay.
I didn't feel anything rushed. I really didn't. It seemed to me like this was a plan for, it's not like they made Endgame go, dude, we gotta get Captain Marvel in. Like, they don't rush movies. They've been planning on doing this stuff for a while.
Okay. You know? But I don't feel like she had an arc in this. Like, you look at Iron Man, the first Iron Man movie, and you look at the character arc that Tony goes through from the beginning of that movie, by the time he says, I am Iron Man at the end. And even Captain America and Doctor Strange, like, they are strong character movies. I kind of feel like a bunch of stuff just happens to Carol Danvers.
I don't see that.
Me neither.
Okay.
I will tell you that my only gripe with the movie, and it's not really a gripe, it's more like a, you know, purposeful suggestion, is that at the end, they did play up the her, you know, getting up after being knocked down and finally going full power and all that. And I feel like they might have been missing a scene or two that would have made that perfect.
Exactly.
But
there was no connective tissue for that to the rest of the movie.
There was some connective tissue, but I feel like they could have made, but the rest of the movie was just fun.
It's not like Captain Marvel was struggling throughout the movie, and then that was her moment where she finally, like, was got up and, like, got past all her struggles. Like, she wasn't struggling in what was happening to her in that movie. Like, there was struggles in the flashbacks, but they weren't connected to what was going on currently in the story.
Disagree. Struggles she has is not knowing what she is. The struggle of Captain Marvel isn't the same kind of character arc that we've seen from the earlier, specifically the earlier MCU movies. The character arc in this one is believing you're something and finding out everything you believe in is a lie. It's a different kind of movie. It's a different kind of story. That is her struggle. It's not, this is why I think a lot of people assumed it was going to be like this whole girl power, you don't think I can do it kind of thing. And there is a little bit of that, but they don't beat it over your head because it's not a female dominated movie, but there's a lot of females that play major roles in it. Like, I think that the arc in this movie is more, I don't know who I am. And I have all these great things. I don't really know what they do. I don't know what I am. Like, I can do all these things, but what am I? And I think the story of this movie is really about challenging a perception. And it's not so much of a, I need to get up story. It's a great moment in the movie, but the crux of that scene isn't I have to get up because everyone's been holding me down. The crux of that scene is I have to get up because I finally figured out who I am.
Which in that case, it was her realizing that part of the reason why they had been telling her all along to control your emotions and, you know, don't use your power as much as she could was, I think you get the feeling that they were hiding from her the fact that she was so powerful she could basically wipe them all out.
So here's something else. And this, I don't think this is nitpicking where I feel people might say that is.
Go ahead.
Was she an idiot? Does she continue to get hit in the head with a coconut? Why on earth did she never question, how come I'm the only one who has powers?
Because they've been telling her all along that they gave them to her.
Right, but why didn't it, like, you're fighting a war, and these powers would help if everyone had them, you know, or at least a band of soldiers had them. Why is she the only one in 6 years?
Why does Jude Law also look like a human? And she does too. There's a lot of questions that.
Because that is all canon in the comic book. There are white Kree and there are blue Kree. That's all in the comic book. But
that's not in the movie.
But I can look past that. Like, that doesn't need to be explained.
That does need to be explained. Everyone else is blue with the exception of those two.
But then why doesn't she question that?
Because it doesn't matter. You know, it's brainwashed. She's brainwashed.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing. She's only got 5 years of memories to work off of. Right. So she didn't have the experience again to question it like you would after, you know, not having your brainwashed.
And she's a soldier. Soldiers are taught, like, as part of being a soldier, you don't question authority, which leads to the thing of questioning authority. That's a common trope in a soldier story.
However, again, connective tissue where they show her in the flashbacks, going against the grain, and
she's a different person.
But she's still that person. That's still in her.
No, but that's the point. It's like, of course, it's in her, but she's fighting it.
Now, see, that doesn't work for me. I'm telling you, that doesn't work for me.
I appreciate that it doesn't work for you, but I'm telling you that it's also there. Like, she's fighting who she is. She doesn't know what she is. And that's the whole thing, is it's not like I have to overcome, it's who am I? What is my purpose? And then she finds out that everything she believes in is a lie. That's the story of this movie. Like, if you woke up one day and you had no recollection of what you are, but you had all these powers, and everyone says, oh yeah, you've always had those. You would go, oh, okay, I always have these. It's like if you were to wake up tomorrow and you were 6'6", and you say, I don't remember being 6'6". And everyone around you goes, dude, you've always been 6'6". What's your deal? You would kind of go, oh, I guess I'm 6'6". We as human beings accept the reality with which we are presented, especially when we are presented this knowledge from people that we trust. That is literally a big crux of the movie, is the people that she trusted lied to her. That's if you wake up tomorrow and you find out mom and dad aren't mom and dad.
That's, you know, right.
It's the same thing.
Which is also a big part of Winter Soldier. I get it, but I don't know. It didn't feel like it was enough to carry the movie.
See, that was my only thing about it, was that it felt like maybe there was one, two, or three scenes that, you know, are probably going to be in the DVD when it comes out, because the movie was long, that you know, that would
basically bring all that together perfectly. But otherwise, yeah, they're not, these are not concepts that movie watchers are unused to bridging themselves.
Yeah, especially when it's an ideal thing of her not knowing her past.
All right, so let's tackle this a slightly different way too. Let's start with JD. What was your favorite thing in the movie?
My favorite thing in the movie is the interaction between Fury and her. I think they have really good chemistry together. I think their stuff plays really, really well. I also like the relationship a lot between Captain Marvel and the future Captain Marvel.
If they do that.
They probably will. There's a reason she's in there.
Or they'll make her Pulsar, who she is.
Or Spectrum, right?
Or Photon. She's had some.
I'm sorry, Photon. Okay. That's it.
But she was also Spectrum, yeah.
Yeah, she's had a lot. I mean, like, Monica Rambeau is a big character, and I like how they included her. But I think that the little girl they had did great. I also really like that they didn't do a love story, that she has no love interest in the movie.
Yes.
I think that it's, quite frankly, a little demeaning to say that, women need a love story in a movie. And I like that. It didn't even occur to me after the movie was over that there was no hint of, like, a love story or sexual tension or anything like that in the film.
Well, she did look at Fury a couple of times. And
yeah, he's already old by this point. You know, he's old then. If I could complain about one thing, it's the Flerken took his eye. That I was like, okay, now you lost me. But that's a minor quibble.
Right, we'll get to the Flerken in a minute. How about you, John? What was your favorite thing about this movie?
Oh, the Flerken. I want one. I like my cats, but if my cats could grow tentacles, it would be so much better. No, I agree. Like the on the road comedy act between Fury and Captain Marvel was pretty good, and how it grew to the point where they trusted each other, you know. It seemed like that was a point in Nick Fury's life where he was a lot more open, so he could make a friend like that. Whereas in the present day, nobody knows him well enough to be his friend.
Yeah, he's less snake bit in this movie, which makes sense. You know, we're all different 25 years than what we were 25 years ago. I kind of like that.
Which means that it's going to be interesting in Endgame, if they bring Fury back for any of it, that you'll be able to see a camaraderie between those two that the others won't share. And they could play that pretty interestingly, I think. But otherwise, yeah, no, and the chemistry between her and her friend, because, you know, that's, I don't know, kind of tugged on the heartstrings there. Like, you know, my friend's been gone for 5 years and you just show up and now you've got amnesia and, you know, why don't you remember me? And that sort of thing, like, you know, that wanting to reach out and not being able to yet. That was pretty, there was a little thing. This is my thing. Mostly because this is something you kind of see in a lot of the animes, where it's that when she finally realized the kind of power she had and, like, you know, that smile that she got when it's like, oh, that's right. I know a cheat code to all this. And then went up and started just destroying everything. It's, I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, me too. I like what it means, like, you're more than you think you are. That's a great lesson for anybody, is you can do more than you think you can. Even if you think you're capable of a lot, it turns out you're capable of more. I think it's cool. It's a cool moral for a superhero movie.
Mm.
All right. I think I liked Brie Larson in the movie. I think
Me too.
She, like, that. She did a great job with what she was given. You know, like, for what she was going through, she did a good job of portraying somebody struggling with, when she was starting to get her memories back. I look forward to her in other movies. You know, at this point, other MCU movies. I kind of like the chemistry between her and Samuel Jackson, but at the same time, being a longtime Nick Fury fan, both original and ultimate, I don't like him being relegated to comedy, you know, comedy relief.
It wasn't just comedy. It was, that was a time before they even knew that aliens existed, let alone had started thinking about really having to deal with superpowered beings. So, you know, and again, like JD said, that, you know, he was vulnerable back then. He's just open. He's, you know, not jaded. So,
but,
you know.
But there really wasn't a time like that in Fury's life.
Different Fury, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. These aren't the comic book versions of the characters. You know, yeah. Bucky Barnes wasn't Cap's teen sidekick. You know, he was the guy that actually took care of Steve Rogers. That's a pure movie invention that's actually helped strengthen the bond that they have in this film. In these films, I should say. You know, Star-Lord isn't the son of Jason of Spartax. He's the son of Ego.
I don't know. I like Nick Fury as the badass. I don't like, you know, and which leads me to another, again, going back to some of the issue I have with some of the writing in this movie is I feel like there were times, and I know this is the newer MCU movies rely more on humor than some of the other ones, but I felt like at times they sacrificed explaining a plot point as for a cheap joke. Case in point, when they're in the bar and she's like, how do I know you're not a Skrull? And he's, you know, starts saying things and giving him back, you know, interesting things in his past that works. And he goes, how do I know you're not a Skrull? And she shoots the jukebox. And it's like,
I'm sorry, that was funny.
No, yeah. It was stupid. I rolled my eyes at it because funny. It's like, number one, Nick Fury doesn't know that Skrulls can't shoot photons. And guess what? She's the only Kree that can do it.
And so, she doesn't, yeah, but.
But that he doesn't also, prove a thing. And if you can also, copy down to the DNA, then how do you know they can't copy shooting photons?
But that's the thing is, he says, I wouldn't know that. That's literally the line he says in the story.
Like, I know, and that's why, exactly, I rolled my eyes and then he said it. It was just like, yeah, it was, I don't know. I think
she's, at that point, she's really the outsider and assumes that, like, she lands on Earth assuming that everybody knows what's going on in the outer,
She doesn't realize how bumpkins we are.
Right. Like, she gives us more credit than we deserve as far as, you know, knowledge of alien races go. Like, I like that. I think it's a nice little character moment. Is it also shows how kind of trusting that she is and susceptible.
I suppose. I don't know. I guess I didn't connect with the story. And it's, you know, that it just bothers me.
Fair enough. You are allowed to not connect with it. I feel you.
I guess it's also like what it really comes down to. And again, I enjoyed aspects of the movie, but at the end of the movie, right? Like, put yourself in her shoes, right? There was an accident.
She wore boots.
There was an accident. You got these powers, but lost your memory. You were fighting in a war for 6 years, that, you know, because you were being used by one side. It really wasn't your war. And, you find out at the end who you really are. Your memories all come rushing back. Like, I understand, look, I understand the sense of obligation of helping the Skrulls at that point. But the never coming back in 25 years?
She says that I'll be back soon. It's also possible she don't know how long she's been gone.
Plus you notice the lack of aging.
Yeah, the suit's a little different, the hair's a little different, but I mean, like, she doesn't look a day older, so I mean, it could be, she's gonna be like, I've been gone for how long? Like, that's what's gonna happen in the next movie. And that's easy to predict and call that what you want, but I mean, like, it's one of those things, man, like, you go off to do something and it takes a lot longer than you, man, I tell my wife I'll be back in 15 minutes and an hour flies by.
Not 25 years, though.
But that's the thing, but it could be. Like, who knows where she's been? And what
I've actually said this to a lot of people I talk to. In my personal opinion, and of course you're going to lose some of the 90s jokes that were in the movie, I think the movie works better if it was 2005 instead of 1995. Because then it's right before Iron Man and all of that starts up, and it's a little bit easier to swallow. She's been gone for 15 years than 25.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to make that call until I see what they do. If Endgame there winds up being giant holes, then I'll agree with that. But I mean, like, they rarely misfire in these movies. And I think there's a reason that they chose the 1990s. I mean, and we don't entirely know what that is yet, and that's fine. My big complaint about these movies is they can't be watched in a vacuum, right? This is as close as we come sometimes to getting a movie in a vacuum. Like, I can't say for sure.
I almost felt like they said it in the 90s so that it could be standalone in that aspect.
It could be, but I want to see, like, where it goes. Like, we got a younger, it's far enough away where there leaves some opening. And I said before on the show that I want a Fantastic Four in the 60s out of some wave of the MCU. So, I mean, like, I'm okay with it for now, but I want to see why. I want to know the reasons why. Why did it have to be 1995? Well, I'm willing to hold out till the next movie comes out and see why.
Okay.
I mean, those are unanswered questions, but we get those with these movies.
Okay.
But the last one was the biggest cliffhanger in history where they killed Spider-Man. I mean, like, before I poop on that idea, but I'm not saying you're wrong because you could be 100% correct. I just want to give them the benefit of the doubt before I agree.
Okay. And what did you guys think of the retcon of the MCU that was in this movie?
The S.H.I.E.L.D. thing?
Yeah. Well, there's two retcons in it. The first one obviously being, that's the big one. Them calling themselves S.H.I.E.L.D. when Coulson says, oh, we're calling ourselves S.H.I.E.L.D. for the first time in Iron Man 2.
Right. I caught that.
Cause I don't know why. I can't think of the name of the agency that Carter was from.
Yes. SSI.
SSI. Why couldn't they be SSI? You know, because he's also flashing the S.H.I.E.L.D. badge around. Like, people know what they are too. And no one knew who S.H.I.E.L.D. was in Iron Man 1 and so on.
Well, maybe they'd gone underground by then.
We don't, yeah, again, because there's a big time gap, there's a lot of wiggle room.
But again, Coulson was there and he's saying S.H.I.E.L.D. and then he acts like in Iron Man 2, it's the first time they're calling themselves S.H.I.E.L.D. So it was kind of like why? You could have made jokes about them saying the full name.
Well, okay.
And then
what's the other retcon,
and I know people are going to argue with this, is the how they end up with the cosmic cube. I'm sorry, the Tesseract.
I got a question on this one. Go for it. I have a theory.
Because he says in Avengers
about this.
Because Fury says in Avengers that Howard Stark dug up the Tesseract. And so your assumption is Howard Stark they got it from Howard Stark. S.H.I.E.L.D. got it from Howard Stark. So how did it end up on Mar-Vell's floating laboratory?
Okay. I've seen this, and I didn't read that with the way everybody else did. When I first saw that, my question was, where did they come up with another Tesseract? Because that last scene, Nick Fury is at an empty desk. I truly think he is at an empty desk because he's already been eliminated. And that the cat barfs up the Tesseract now. I don't think that's the original Tesseract because I was doing the same thing. I was trying to do the mental leaps to make it work.
No, if you looked at the monitor, that was only probably a few days later or something.
Was it? I mean, like, until I don't know.
Yes.
My eyes went right to the monitor to check and see what type it was.
It's a CTR monitor. It's not a flat panel monitor.
CRT,
sorry. yes, I thought that too. And it's like, no, that's definitely a 90s office.
Yeah.
However, it's a different color monitor. He has a white monitor when he's sitting there typing, and in that after credit scene, it was a black monitor. So it could be later on at some point, but it's now, still like late 90s, early 2000s.
When they find the Tesseract, I believe is in Thor, they find the Tesseract the first time. And it's at Project Pegasus.
Right.
So
I believe so.
It could have been a simple fact of Howard Stark digs it up and Mar-Vell gets it from there.
From Stark.
There's holes in it. I'm still not entirely sold that it's the same Tesseract.
Flirkin.
To be quite honest. Flirkin, thank you. I'm not entirely, until proven wrong, I reserve the right to question the validity of that being the only Tesseract.
Right. So, and this is a discussion I actually would say.
Oh. Sorry, just one thing. If that is a second Tesseract or the same one, but from a different time, that could hint at some really gnarly storyline plot threads through Endgame.
Could be, because we've talked about time travel. So when time
we know it's going to be time travel, yeah.
Right. So with time travel on the table, like I think continuity questions are kind of up in the air because I don't know. I mean, like there have been more than one cosmic cube. If it's a cosmic cube,
hold on. Wait a minute. Oh shit. There's a rumor that some of the plot points were leaked for Endgame, and that when Ant-Man Scott Lang comes out of the quantum realm, while he's in the quantum realm, he ends up into a time, I forget what they call it, let's say time vortex, and he ends up coming out of the quantum realm in the 80s.
Hmm. Fun stuff.
So, could there be something where he runs into S.H.I.E.L.D. and he says S.H.I.E.L.D.?
It's possible.
Which, oh god. Anyway.
It's possible. Like, these guys, they don't make a lot of these mistakes, and because if it's like comics where different people are writing and retcons and stuff happen, I would just chalk it up to, well, you know, shit happens. But I mean, Kevin Feige keeps a pretty tight lid on these things. And if we know that time travel is on the table for the next one, using a cosmic cube would make sense in how he gets back.
Right. And actually, I was having a conversation with someone about this at work too. I believe originally that the plan for the Tesseract, when they introduced it in the first Avenger, it was housing the Space Stone. I believe the original plan was that was going to be the Cosmic Cube.
It is the Cosmic Cube. They just call it the Tesseract because it sounds a lot cooler than Cosmic Cube.
Okay, but the Cosmic Cube is holding the Space Stone, right? So yes. It's like, that's a weird thing that never happened in the comics.
No, yeah. Hmm. Let's say like all comics, like if you read comics from the 90s, they don't quite mesh up with what they are today. Like, people were in a constant state of retcon.
This is
true.
This is
so
really true.
I'd like to not harp on the continuity things until the time travel movie is done.
Until Endgame, right. I get it.
At that point, if there's still big holes, I'll be the first to go, yeah, they're wrong. Crucify them. Like, but until then, I'm going to hold off on that. I'm still not sure when that cat barfs up that cosmic cube.
We didn't talk about this, but At the very, 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 very beginning of the movie, did you guys feel like you were kicked in the gut?
The very, very beginning of the movie? Like, when you talk about how the movie starts?
Yeah, with the logo.
Stan Lee. Yeah. That was so awesome. I got teary-eyed, and I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
My son looked over at me when he saw it. Yeah. Because he's like, oh, my dad's going to cry. I knew he was thinking that.
How about the actual cameo?
Yeah, that was interesting. I kind of wondered, why didn't they de-age him?
I don't know.
They did it for everyone else. Wow.
That's a good question. Probably because they didn't think to. Or maybe they thought it was a little disrespectful because it's...
I would go with that. Yeah.
Post-mortem? It's a little morbid way to say it. But I mean, like, maybe they felt like changing Stan's image after he died would be in poor taste.
That's a good question. I would like to know. That's something I would love to find out. Like, was he originally de-aged so he looked like Stan from the 90s who reading the Mallrat script? Or was he not never a part of the plan. And, yeah, I mean, so officially Kevin Smith exists in the MCU.
Which is crazy because that movie is based on Stan Lee's writing of Marvel Comics.
Yes.
So it's a cute joke, but when you think about it, your brain kind of melts.
That was great. That cameo.
The one other thing I wanted to mention was Agent Coulson being there. It Marvel again always going just like a little bit extra, just putting a little bit of a extra effort. And there's Coulson, and you get to see like how Fury begins to really trust him when he lets him go in the stairwell.
It's kind of a motif that appears through this movie is disobeying orders, soldiers disobeying orders.
Oh, and that's,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, because that was interesting too, because they do call him the new guy a couple times.
Yep.
In the film, but it's funny because so along those lines, not really along those lines, something else. So one of my coworkers brought this up, and I agree with this point as well. Like. Mar-Vell, okay?
Yes.
Like, if you're gonna change her sex, why did you make her a waste of a character? In the sense of, they relegated Mar-Vell to just being a Kree scientist, where Mar-Vell is the first character in Marvel Comics who ever defeated Thanos, and was, you know, like the greatest Kree warrior, so it was like...
Well, Different movie again, and she wasn't a waste because she's the one that set up this whole thing.
Well, no.
Save
because in the sense they kept by there being an accident that gives her powers, gives Carol Danvers her powers. They kept in a way the origin of Carol Danvers the same as the comics, but you know they changed. But like why? Mar-Vell wasn't a warrior. It was like, well, that just doesn't make sense. You know, like, then why bother changing her to a woman? Like it, you didn't use the character beyond, anything. And it felt like, who's the actress who played her?
It was Annette Bening.
Yeah. It almost felt like, well, we got Annette Bening. So let's just make this work.
Well, you do have to use your Annette Bening really well while you've got her.
Counterpoint. It's not Mar-Vell's movie. Two. In the comics, Mar-Vell leaves the Kree, like the very first Captain Marvel books from the 60s. Mar-Vell leaves the Kree because he learns what they truly are. And yeah, it is more of a war thing, like he becomes a warrior, but, I don't know, it was
But why couldn't she still have been a warrior? Like why, you know what I'm saying? She was still a scientist who, she was still, like, yeah, she was just a scientist. I was going to say still working for the Kree, but she wasn't. She was secretly working on something to help the Skrulls, which we can get into all that. That's a whole other podcast.
I don't know. Like, I'll write it off to we don't know what happened before. Maybe she was a warrior that just got tired of fighting. Like she said, she wants to end wars. People want to end wars that work for the system. Traditionally, are people that are tired of fighting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, to be fair, I get where you're coming from on this, but it's not her movie.
Yep.
And I actually like it because there's a little bit of a fake out. I think a lot of people assumed Jude Law was going to be Mar-Vell, and it wasn't. It's kind of a surprise. I looked at my wife with jaw slacked when they revealed that.
No,
I went, what?
No, because I think they did reveal who Jude Law was before the movie came out, though.
They probably did, but I mean, like, I think a lot of people assumed he was going to be Mar-Vell.
Yeah.
But I think it was kind of cool. Wound up being the villain. What'd you guys think of the twist where the Skrulls aren't the bad guys?
I don't know how I feel about that.
I feel the same way. I don't know about it.
Well, knowing what we know about the Kree so far in this universe, it didn't really surprise me.
Well, my wife said that too. My wife doesn't read comics, but she loves these movies. She's like, the whole time, she's like, aren't the Kree the bad guys? And I'm like, yeah, let's see where it's going. Because I assumed we would get the war where they're both bad.
If you've watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then you know that they damn well are the bad guys. Like, they're just fucking evil.
Here's the thing, right? Like, there's been an assumption, and the other thing is we can't go into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they don't consider them part of the continuity anymore. But
except that Agent Coulson was in this show.
I know. But but again, a lot of people, they argue that Coulson died in Avengers, so...
Joss Whedon swears by it.
Yeah. So the show doesn't count. But there's also arguments that they only used the Kree because they couldn't use the Skrulls because they thought they were saving the Skrulls for a Fantastic Four movie. Because I don't know how the rights all were tied up with that. I know Super Skrull was definitely tied to
Fantastic Four.
Yeah. It has to. Mm.
So, the way I wrote this off in my head, because I do want to see a Secret Invasion movie, was these Skrulls are okay. Maybe not all of them, because even in Marvel, there are pockets of Skrulls. like Secret Invasion specifically, you had your religious extremist sect of Skrulls.
Right, and that's definitely a direction they can go, because they can also go that, like, you can't sit there and say the entire Kree Empire is bad, just the ones waging war are bad. And not all the Skrulls are good, but these refugees were good. You know, like, you can definitely do that and get away with it. You can also say, and this might be why it was 25 years ago, they built up an army, and now they want to... And since Ronan was killed, and the Kree Empire has been weakened because Captain Marvel went after the Supreme Intelligence, now they're building up their army and getting revenge for all the ways they were treated.
Entirely possible. I do imagine that a Kree Skrull war of some sort has raged on these past quarter century. I just want to see a synchronization movie at some point.
Yeah.
That's just me. I like that story.
See, and then it also comes into, because that's another rumor, is that Secret Invasion is where they were going. And
I think everybody thought that until we found out the Skrulls were the good guys. And remember when Talos gets shot, I'm like, oh, the kid saw it. That's going to motivate him on Batman style to become a evil. Oh, no, he lived. I was like, oh, I was wrong about that. Like, it's unfortunately, sometimes us nerds try to see the links between everything rather than, like, just letting yourself get, like, into the movie sometimes.
Right. This is very true.
Like, I think our own expectations limit us in some. And it's so weird because you get so excited to see this stuff. And then when it challenges your notions, you're like, wait a minute. That's not what it's supposed to be. But and
who was that? Show. Who was that played that?
Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben, yes.
The bad guy, Krennic from Rogue One.
Yes, I thought he was... I liked it.
He's great.
Which is like, I don't want to like him.
I know. He's really good.
Every Skrull comic I've ever read, it's like, no, I'm not allowed to like him. So,
like, you know what's kind of cool, too, is I like that they kind of showed the original Skrulls, the Fantastic Four 2, the cow Skrulls, if you will. Like, the simpleton Skrull that she kind of fools when she's getting her mind read.
Uh-huh.
Like,
those weird littler
yes,
ones?
So, yes.
Yeah, that's the original Skrulls that show up in Fantastic Four 2.
Oh, yeah. So I thought that was
a nice little continuity thing, which made me think of the Skrull hamburgers and Skrull Kill Crew. Any chance I can get to praise Grant Morrison?
All right. So I think, you know, like, We're all saying go see the movie. I don't think it's a perfect movie. It's a movie worth going to see, but it's not a perfect movie. I think we could wrap it up because we don't want to be a dead horse, and this is already an hour and a half into the show. So let's wrap it up like we always do. Go around final thoughts and give it a score, 1 out of 10. And we can start with JD.
So I'm not going to rate this one. I talked to my wife knowing this question was coming, and she really loved this movie. So I said, Michelle, rate this movie for me. And she said nine stars. So I'm not going to give any of my smart-ass normal answers. This movie connected for her because she loves superhero stories and didn't have any when she was growing up. And for a woman in her 30s to feel this way about a character is beyond me at that point. So for my wife, nine stars.
Okay. John?
Well, I see, I got the same feeling with this movie that I got with Black Panther, where it was just, although I think it, I feel like this one's better than Black Panther, because Black Panther felt like it was it was just.
I actually disagree with that too.
I don't know. Just hear me out. Maybe you can tell me how I'm wrong. But no, the thing is, it just Black Panther felt like, you know, the story was just so smooth and just, you know, it was kind of formulaic and all that. But everything was great. You know, this one felt more organic. You know. It's the only way I can really like articulate it right now is that this one felt more organic to me and more real. It was a way of saying it than Black Panther did. I invested more in the characters. I enjoyed seeing the banter. The jokes landed with me. So I really think this is one of the better ones in the entire MCU. And it leads into Endgame, which I'm trying not to take into account, but it's kind of hard. So I'm going with a 9 on this one.
You can send your hate mail to john@superheroespeak.com because
I already have it redirected to you if it comes. Anything with foul language in it goes redirected right back.
I definitely,
you are the glorious leader. You have to deal with that.
I definitely disagree. I feel Black Panther was a much more natural, organic movie than this. But
yeah. I think Black Panther is a better made film.
Yeah.
But I hear where you're coming from. Like, Black Panther does follow the Marvel tropes, for better word, more than this movie does. But I think I like Black Panther more.
That's part what was in my head. It's like, yeah, Black Panther was more technically well made. It's just that this one is, you know, I connected more.
I just got it. Damn it.
Got what?
That's the problem. That is the problem with this movie, and it's why it feels more like a, Phase 1 MCU movie than a current MCU movie. Thank you, John, for
I agree with that.
Because the villains in this are more mustache twirly than sympathetic, where they have made an effort in the later movies to make the villains a little more sympathetic.
That's only recently, though. Only like the past 4 or 5 movies have been really pulling that off.
Yeah, he's right. You're right.
Well, Phase 3. That's really when they started doing it, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Thank you, John. Thank you for that.
But they weren't inconsequential. You know, it's not like you could have replaced the bad guys in this, like that AI and the artificial intelligence and what's his name. The one who wanted her to fight with bare fists, even though she could just make him into a grease smudge.
I love that scene.
I know, me too. But the thing, you know, it wasn't like whatever the name was of the dark elf in Thor: The Dark World. I mean, you know, you could have replaced that guy with a box of baking soda. It would have been the same.
But as I'm saying, like, you can't sympathize with that villain. You can't sympathize with these villains because they're just showed what
you kind of can. I mean, not sympathize, but you can understand that their motivations.
Their motivations are they want to take over the universe, and they're twirling their mustaches while they're doing.
And they found a weapon, and instead of destroying it, they were giving it a go of trying.
But that's what I'm saying.
What makes it different though is we don't really like the story. I should say we don't know. The story doesn't present them as the villains. Until the last third of the film. Right. So I think that's what, you're right. You're totally right. There's nothing sympathetic about these Kree at all. Mm-hmm. But what makes this work a little bit differently is we're not really.
And their motivation really is just to be evil. Like there's no.
No, it's not. It's to continue their foreign policy, which is to rule over everything, which I'm told is a wonderful thing.
They were empire building, basically.
I mean, isn't imperialism what we're all about? Like, don't we love that?
Oh my god. So,
JD at superheroespeak.com.
No, I agree with you, JD. I mean, it's they, you could, even if you didn't, you couldn't sympathize with them, you could understand the direction they were trying to go in.
And they're wrong and they're evil, but what makes them different is they're not, the story doesn't say, doesn't tell you that these are the bad guys, which is important. Like, that's important in the story, is to establish, you know, what the stakes are and who the rivals are. And when you throw a curveball like that, it worked. It's an effective curveball. I think that's what makes it a little bit different. And it does make up for the fact that the villains, they ain't no Killmonger. Ron Yogg is not a Killmonger, you know?
No, that's a brilliant bad guy, definitely.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I will give it, I'm going to say 7.5 capes. And again, it's not like I have nothing against Brie Larson. I have nothing against the character. I just feel like I didn't think the story was good enough to introduce her. You know, at this point, they have raised the stakes over and over again with these movies, and I just don't think they did it with this one.
But I think 7.5 is a fair score for how you feel about the film.
Yeah.
Yes.
More than fair.
I am trying to be as fair as possible to this movie. So.
No argument.
Yeah. So that being said, thanks for listening. And as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week. Yeah, I just felt like there was minor tweaks they could have made that would have made this movie 10 times better. Again, I think if it was a decade later and there was a little less Fury being comedy relief at times, I think it would have been a better movie. I would have kept most of it the same.
That's cool.
And a little more connective tissue with her parents and her flashbacks and to her standing up to intelligence, because they brush over that all from the comics. That's hinting at her relationship with her father from the comics, which is her key motivator for her becoming Miss Marvel. And it's just like, well, why she joins the Air Force and everything. So it's like they could have brought that in more, and then so her standing up to the intelligence would have been a much more powerful scene. So yeah. Damn it, I said that after we were done.